accession number 33250, Reel 3.
So John Wilton, Reel 3. So when did you arrive in Algiers?
I've got it on a piece of paper here.
I think you got March down here, I think.
Yes. The answer is either very late February or early March. I got the 17th of March when I joined the battalion, but let me explain. We landed in Algiers. We went to a camp called Maison Carré, and there we were put on. After about a week, we were put on a train to go all the way up to Tunisia to a place called Souk El Arba, where you left the train and took to the road. The train was the customary First World War arrangement, cattle trucks which said 40 men or 8 horses, but for officers there was a carriage with wooden seats. Well, having tried to get our bedrolls and the camp beds down in the carriage with the seats and so forth, which were very uncomfortable, we decided very quickly that we'd rather have one of the 40 men 8 horse arrangements. At least that way you got your camp bed down and you could move about a bit. Fortunately, there was a room in one of the, there was enough spare space to allow us to do that, and we did. And so we travelled up the line, rather boring, very little to see or do. Occasionally the train would stop, and immediately we would be surrounded by children mostly, wanting to sell us eggs. And we would buy some eggs, and we would take a biscuit tin, a 14-pound biscuit tin, along to the engine driver, ask if he'd give us some hot water. And we would go and try and cook the eggs in some way or another. I got quite good at making omelettes in a mess tin, but the only great activity was seeing what one could do to keep off the boredom. One chap at least found a solution. He had, when the train stopped, he decided that he needed to go to the loo, so he'd gone over the nearest sand dune, and while he was there with his trousers down, the train moved off. But he made his way to the road, hitched a lift, and got to the next station well before the train did, and was waiting for us there when we arrived. But it was a fairly lengthy and not very entertaining journey.
What happened to you during your period at Maison Carré?
Well, nothing much. You never knew when you were going to be moved, when you were going to be told, right, draft leaves so-and-so, parade with your kit at 3:30 tomorrow morning, or whatever. So you couldn't go very far away. What you did was sit about and talk, and you could go to a bar in the nearest estaminet and experiment on whether you wanted to drink Capcos or red wine or whatever, and really very quickly decided neither really very much, but it was going up the line tends to be a very boring business. Anyway, we got to Sukhul Arba, where we were put into the next sort of stage of the camp reinforcement process. They all had names. There were, you know, there was the I've forgotten what they were, but you moved forward slowly from camp to camp. Sukhul Arba was notable for only one thing. It had a Turkish bath, where there was an old Turk who would give you a Turkish bath with massage, which was very welcome after a week in the train, but nothing else much there. So on we went until eventually I arrived on the 17th of March in the 6th Inniskillen Fusiliers. And I mean, you say to yourself, well, why is that? Why here is a rifleman, there is a rifle battalion in the brigade, why don't they send the rifle battalion? The answer is, well, the brigadier runs the brigade more or less as a family. If he needs somebody here rather than there, then they go here rather than there. And that was the basis on which the Irish Brigade was run during the whole of the wars and after. It was a very good and very efficient arrangement. Anyway,
how did they receive you when you
How
did they receive you when you arrived with them?
Oh, fine. You know, I was shown where I was to sleep, which was on a hillside. I rather foolishly settled for a bit of a ditch, and it rained in the night, so I got wetter than I needed to, but that was all right. But the point about the Inniskillens was that there were many good points about them. First, I mean, they didn't march at the same frantic pace as the riflemen. I am much more fusilier shape than I am rifleman shape, so I didn't resent that. The other thing about them was that they had just lost their mortar officer, and they needed a mortar officer. And here I was, fresh from Netherhaven, curtailed, admittedly, but I was told to get down to the mortar lines and take hold of the mortar platoon, which I did.
What was the makeup of that platoon?
It was three mortars, each mortar run by a section, commanded by a corporal and a couple of mortar men, a platoon headquarters, which was me and a sergeant and a driver of the carrier, the Bren gun carrier, which we used to carry the mortars, a fitter and a range finder and a dispatch rider. The dispatch rider, generally speaking, also honorary batman to the platoon commander. So there we were. I was very fortunate in my headquarters, because two of them, the carrier driver and they were both Derbyshire quarriers, and they used to go underground at a great rate and very neatly, very tidy. My slit trench was always one of the deepest and tidiest. They were extremely good at getting dug in. Anyway, the fitter was a Scottish gillie who had various skills. One of his accomplishments was that he had acquired, in some way or another, a mounting for two Bren guns for use against aircraft. How he had done this, I didn't ask, and I merely gave thanks that he had. He was a very good shot. On the one occasion that we were attacked from the air, he managed to put a burst through the plane that was attacking us, and it disappeared over the hill in a cloud of black smoke, and we don't know where or when it landed, but you know, it was nice to have a chap who was good, as good as he was at shooting. Anyway, I set about getting to know my mortars and my mortar chaps and so on. There wasn't a great deal that they could do at that particular stage of the fighting. My first battle, the Germans had reinforced Tunisia fairly heavily. Hitler had decided that they would have to hold on to Tunisia, otherwise Italy, Malta and so forth would be in danger. So, Italy and Sicily, I mean. He reinforced them. And the general commanding the German force at that point, von Arnim, pushed down from Tunis westward and southward. And the westward bit came down like this. It stuck out a bit and then it went on down south. This was known as the von Arnim salient, and it was the thing that the Irish Brigade were given orders to attack and demolish just as I arrived. The first battle in which I was involved. Now, in addition to the mortar platoon commander who had been killed, the commanding officer had been killed too. He had been shot clean through the forehead. Sniper. He was, like so many commanding officers, determined to see what was going on, and he. He paid for that one. We got, shortly afterwards, a new commanding officer who had come straight from England, from staff college and so forth, where he had performed exceptionally well and had been told, in short, right now you get some battle experience and then the sky's the limit. So there he was. He was an extremely good commanding officer. But there's always a but. When he arrived, his head was still full of staff tables and statistics and what soldiers could be expected to do, to how much they could carry, the first battle, engaged in rolling up the von Arnim salient, involved for the Inniskillens attacking a low hill over there across an open space with down into a shallow valley and up the other side to attack the thing. In other words, everything that you did was clearly and a clear observation from the defensive positions, and it was not going to be easy. Now, there is not really any sensible role for a 3-inch mortar in a situation like that, except to stay where they are if they're in range, and plaster the target if they can get to it. It was at extreme range, and the CO's solution to that was that we should move forward behind the infantry, and so that we got within range. The trouble is that the whole business was under observation, and if you stopped on a slope like that in a bare ground and started planting your mortars and so forth, you would be annihilated. You would be seen, and you could be ranged on blown to bits. It wasn't a good idea at all. The other thing was that it was decided that the carriers should be left behind, and that we should do what was called a long carry. That's to say that you took one or two or whatever the decision was, mortars with you, one chap carrying the base plate, one chap carrying the barrel, another chap carrying the tripod and sights, and the rest of the platoon carrying the bombs. There again, that's a very exhausting process over a very long distance for very long, and you are again unable to do anything about it. You come under fire. What do? You get down on the ground. You look for any little unevenness in the ground. And, what are you going to do? Anyway, it was a very uncomfortable day. And fortunately for us, the troops defending that position were an Austrian regiment, not very enthusiastic about being in this fight at all. And the story, at any rate, by those who got there, was that the Austrians had got their suitcases packed, ready to leave. So, okay, we got away with it, but it was not it was not an ideal introduction to the tactical use of the mortar in battle. Anyway, we got away with that. We rolled the division moved on and rolled up the Von Arnim salient, and we came down onto the main south-northward drive on Tunis, where the 8th Army were coming round the corner already, up and coming up the coast, and the 1st Army were coming in and joining them more or less level at a place called Medjez el Bab. Now, Medjez el Bab was a town in the middle of a great, fairly level plain. There was a nasty hill called Long Stop down by near Medjez el Bab, and on the western side, there was a range of very, very stark, rocky mountains. I mean, really. Cliffs, and these, occupied by the Germans, would make any activity down in the bottom of the valley that measures to Tunis extremely uncomfortable. Again, it was a question of observation. Every move could be seen from these vantage points. This is, of course, a classic doctrine of defence, and the Germans were very good at it, and it went on all the way up Italy. They always sighted themselves where they could see what we were doing and respond accordingly. So the Irish Brigade was told to get up into these mountains through a village, through a place, Tuburwa, and on up with mules and clear them out. Well, it wasn't easy to clear them out. The one place called Tangusha was a cleft in a solid rock face, a cleft like that, which came more or less across our line of advance. We wanted to go up there, but sheltering behind yards of solid rock, there were some chaps with machine guns who, as soon as we came into sight, had us enfiladed. Not good. Well, the first attack, again, the theory was that the mortars would follow up behind the infantry and would establish, when the infantry had established themselves, the mortars would dig in and prepare to repel counterattacks and so forth. Unfortunately, since it was impossible to move by daylight, this operation was done at night, and as it was impossible to do it except on foot and with mules, the mortars were loaded onto mules and followed the infantry. The infantry came under fire. The chaps with the machine guns played hell. One of my mules was hit by an incendiary bullet, which ignited the bombs, and the thing went off like a rocket. You know, I mean, it's funny in retrospect. It wasn't at all funny at the time, but this jet-propelled mule went off into the night. So that was bad. The attack, the infantry withdrew. They couldn't do anything else, and we were told to dig in a very shallow sort of ditch-like thing that ran across the front of that battle. We hoped, more or less out of range of the Germans who were still holding it. But it turned out that we weren't entirely. We dug in, there we were, unable to move at night, except at night, I mean, and heads down. It looked like a stalemate. I mean, what was going to happen next? Fortunately, the engineers again came to the rescue. They, in about 3 days, I think it was, they bulldozed and constructed a track, or they improved the track up the mountain to the point where it was possible to get three Churchill tanks up there. And when the three Churchill tanks appeared, the Germans decided that this was enough, and off they went. So we were then able to advance, and for the next 3 or 4 days we plodded through these sharp mountains and so on, shoving the Germans back as we went. Again, an uncomfortable job. But
were you able to utilise your waters at all during this?
No. We did once set them down and fired a couple of ranging rounds to see if we could see what was going on. I mean, what we did was to fire a smoke round so that you could at any rate see where it landed, unless it landed behind something that you couldn't see through. But it was maddening country. It was so maddening too, because the ground was so bad that by the time I had got there from my various wanderings, my boots fell to pieces, were cut to pieces, really. I bound my feet up with bits of web equipment, and so bits of boot and tied on with web equipment. But our resourceful quartermaster, who didn't have size 13 boots, went down to the Guards Brigade, who did have 13 size 13 boots, and got me a pair of boots. So at least I was able to come off the mountain. Anyway, this was pretty well the end of the story, because by that time the 36 Brigade had dealt with Longstop, and the 6th Armoured Division had moved on to towards Tunis, and Tunis was captured. It was a very bloody sort of situation, but it succeeded. We took a bit of a battering, but it succeeded. And the 78th Division, which was the division that the Irish Brigade was in, the Battle Axe Division, was reckoned to have done well in those nasty mountains, and was the 1st Infantry division into Tunis, led by the Irish Brigade, led by the Enniskillens, who were given the honour of heading the infantry contingent in the subsequent victory parade a week or so later. Very nice. Victory parades, by the way, are the victory parade to Tunis was headed, of course, by the French spahi from the cavalry, from General Juin's army, which had come all the way from West Africa, Chad, and so forth, right the way across, and joined up with us in Tunisia. They were given pride of place, leading the thing with their splendid horses, and followed by the Moroccan goums. A goum in Arabic is a tribe, so the goums were Moroccan tribesmen, and they were the French equivalent of the Gurkhas. They were warriors. The only difference between, or one difference between them and the Gurkhas, was that they wore coarse, stripy blanket things, and they didn't do much washing. They preferred to anoint themselves with rancid butter. Don't know why. Those members of the Irish Brigade who were not actually in the march were lining the route. I was in the lot that lined the route. I was in the lot that lined the route facing the sun, rather than in the lot that lined the route with their backs to the sun. As the cavalry went past the horses, as usual, relieved themselves, the goom coming by, sweating freely in the sunshine of May in Tunisia. Their butter perfumed the air. The infantry then came through, and they were followed by the tanks, which of course emit great clouds of black diesel, especially when proceeding slowly. It's one of the features of a diesel engine. Anyway, so we were standing, looking at the sun, sweating freely, being choked by disagreeable smells, and what is worse, suffering permanent damage to our foreheads. We had worn steel helmets throughout the campaign, and we were told that the rig for the victory parade was the old side hat. That meant we all had a triangle of white ready to be burnt red by the sun, and those of us who stood facing the sun got it. And I still have a problem here that what is called sun damage. Nowadays everybody knows about sun damage. It's what you'd get from lying beside the swimming pool or on the beach. This was got from standing looking at the sun for 2 or 3 hours. Anyway, there. It was a great success, the Tunisian campaign, and Hitler's mistake in reinforcing Tunisia quite so enthusiastically as he did was that he lost 200,000 prisoners apart from cadet and wounded.